You're listening to a message delivered at the Fountains, a United Methodist Church in Fountain Hills, Arizona.
As human beings, we can be pretty dense. It took us countless centuries to get to the point where we learned that we shouldn't kill each other, shouldn't lie or betray or steal or abuse our sexuality, etc. Ideas that were ensconced in the Ten Commandments. But even the Ten Commandments assume the acceptability of things that we've come to reject, like slavery and the subjugation of women. So we're still growing and developing in our capacity to be human, to be humane. One of the things that even the most superficial comparison of religions shows is that while they're all very different, they all have a few similarities in ethical standards. One simple example is what we've come to call the Golden Rule. Don't do to others what you don't want done to you. Jesus formulates it in a positive way on the Sermon on the Mount, but Rabbi Hillel had already said it 20-some years before Jesus. Confucius said it 400 or 500 years before Jesus, and Muhammad 600 years after Jesus. Our two passages today are examples of that golden rule found in the Jewish tradition and in our Gospels. I think they give a glimpse of how Jesus stood firmly in his own tradition and yet put his particular spin on the message.
Our words of wisdom are from the Talmud, Sabbat 31a, and Matthew chapter 7, verse 12. From the Talmud, a certain heathen said, "Make me a proselyte, on condition that you teach me the whole Torah while I stand on one foot." Hillel said to him, "What is hateful to you? Do not do to your neighbor that is the whole Torah. All the rest of it is commentary. Go and learn."
And from Matthew, "So whatever you wish people would do to you, do so to them. For this is the law and the prophets."
Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church.
Thanks be to God.
If we're honest about history, we have to admit that the words of that great Methodist mystic Howard Thurman are correct. For nearly 2,000 years, in large ways and small, the church, and what passes for Christianity, has betrayed Jesus. One of the main reasons we've done this series on saving Jesus has been to shine a light on some of the ways Jesus has been misrepresented, misunderstood, and manipulated to further the prejudices and priorities of very frail and imperfect human beings. And not that we've managed to get the final word in these last few months, but hopefully you've been exposed to some ideas that have given you pause to think about whether Jesus really is worth saving or not. The Jesus we've really concentrated on in this series is what scholars call the historical Jesus, the human being that lived and breathed and taught and healed among other human beings. And this Jesus needs to be thought of as separate from the Christ of faith, the spiritualized figure that the disciples related to post-resurrection. One of the clearest ways of describing how we've gone wrong was pointed out by Robin Myers, who you may remember from Living the Questions or when he spoke here at the Fountains. Look at the Sermon on the Mount. In the whole thing, there's not a single word about what to believe, only instructions on what to do or how to be. Fast forward 300 years to the Nicene Creed and the essence of what is supposed to define a Christian, and there's not a single word about what to do or how to be. only about what to believe. Clearly, something's gone wrong. Not plain enough? Let's add insult to injury and look at both the Apostles' Creed and the Nicene Creed, both products of a church trying to circle the wagons and establish an institutional identity. Both creeds, more or less, say Jesus was born of the Virgin Mary, comma, suffered under Pontius Pilate. There it is. The entire life of Jesus, all of his teachings, the parables, his interaction with the poor, his healings, both metaphorically and literally speaking, all reduced to a comma. And here's the bottom line. Most of us have grown up idolizing the Christ of the creeds, the Christ of faith, and not really giving the Jesus of history his due. So herein lies the saving part. Bernard Brandon Scott has said, "I think the historical Jesus counts now like he's never counted before. What I'm not convinced ought to survive is Christianity. In fact, I've become more and more convinced that Christianity is the enemy of Jesus. When people ask me if I'm a Christian, I almost always say I'm a follower of Jesus, and I'm not sure that's compatible with being a Christian." Ouch. Jesus needs saving because his philosophy of life, what he taught, how he lived, how he related to the divine, is the answer to the problem of human existence. We can adore and confess to the Christ of the creeds, but we can't emulate the Christ of the creeds. For that, we need Jesus of Nazareth, the teacher, the sage, the prophet, the mystic. As we come off our celebration of Easter and what resurrection means for today, it's good to remind ourselves that we make resurrection real by being the resurrected body of Jesus. We save Jesus by becoming prophets and mystics, healers and servants ourselves. I think that's what Jesus was telling us. We're all called to be agents of divine compassion in our crazy, messed up world. Marcus Borg has said, when you come right down to it, the emphasis on believing the right stuff is a total mistake. You can believe all the right things and still be a jerk. You can believe all the right things and still be miserable, or still be in bondage, still be untransformed. It's also so divisive. Once people start thinking that being a Christian is about believing the right things, then anybody's list of what the right things are to believe becomes a kind of litmus test as to who's really a good Christian and who's not. So how different is it that we look to the life and teachings of Jesus as a model for life, instead of making it all about what we have to believe about the Bible or Jesus or God? For a lot of followers of Jesus, it seems like there are only two choices: the rigid, literalistic understanding of the Bible that rejects modern knowledge, modern science, and history, or a kind of rigid secularism that has no spirit left in it. We swing back and forth between these two mutually exclusive ways of seeing the world and are left kind of adrift. I think that's why so many people have left the church in the last few generations. And yet, most of us still yearn for the more and to be in relationship to that more. There's also the reality that most people have a hunger that the world be a better place. If you agree that as human beings we're wired to have those same two desires, then saving Jesus is all the more important. Two realities to keep in mind as we slog our way through the third decade of the 21st century. Number one, there's a massive deliteralization and deconstruction of Christianity going on across the board. If people even care about the creeds or the Bible anymore, which most don't, they know that we don't have to take them literally anymore. It's about metaphor and parable, if they're about anything. And number two, there's a de facto de-absolutization of Christianity going on in the world. That means, I think, faithful Christians are letting go of Christianity, having an absolutely unique and superior status, and seeing it instead as one of the great religions of the world instead of the only true religion. And if you see the reality of both these situations in your life, as I do in mine, then what we can know about the historical Jesus becomes all the more important. We see in Jesus a human being that lived his life fully, and because he was fully human, the divine could come through him unimpaired, because the divine, the more, is over, under, around, and through all that is. Marcus Borg has said, "This understanding of Jesus as a figure of history, as a divine person, was a projection of Christian claims about the divinity of Christ back into the life of this Galilean Jewish peasant." And I think those claims are made about Jesus because of how remarkable he really was, and also because of the significance he had come to have in the lives of the early Christians over the first couple of centuries of the church's existence. But when we project those claims backward, they lead to an utterly unrealistic picture of what Jesus was like as a figure of history. Whenever we emphasize the divinity of Jesus at the expense of his humanity, we lose track of the utterly remarkable human being he was. The South African priest and scholar Albert Nolan puts it this way: "Jesus is a much underrated man. To deprive this man of his humanity is to deprive him of his greatness." Some people aren't aware of it, and others are terrified of it, but the fact is that there is a reformation afoot in Christianity, a complete revisioning of the traditional understandings of Jesus, the virgin birth, atonement, and the Christian life as a whole. Long-held ideas of divinity and of faith are changing and evolving to reflect 21st century thought and spirituality. Saving Jesus is important because it's not about belief so much as it is about being a certain way in the world, participating in realizing the kingdom of God. How? By being in solidarity with the poor, by countering the idolatry of wealth, by practicing nonviolence, by seeking justice and inclusivity in a culture dominated by fear. You know, doing all those Jesus-y things. And the heart of this way of Jesus is compassion, hospitality, and the embracing of diversity, not for their own sakes, but because such behavior was modeled by Jesus. He put people before the rules. He was about moving beyond belief to relationship. He was about changing the world here and now. That's the Jesus I want to be part of saving for my community, for my own life, and for my children.
Well, that doesn't sound very churchy. What's the point of the church if it's not going to establish and maintain proper beliefs and behaviors? I need the church to remind me of what a terrible, depraved worm I am, and that the church is the only source of redemption through a bloodthirsty God that demands the spilling of blood to be satiated.
Wow. Let me suggest that the Sufi mystic Hafiz may have had it right. God sometimes wants to do us a great favor and break all our teacup talk about God. We need to break some teacups. Christianity and the church have come to stand for a lot of things that don't have integrity for a lot of people anymore. Conservative politicians and fundamentalist Christians, often one and the same, are rampaging through our culture, advocating for and legislating hate, discrimination, exclusion, and prudish attitudes that make me embarrassed to be a Christian. Jesus is worth saving because his life and ministry transcend that hateful Christianity and the discriminatory, oppressive church. He shows people a way to live that embraces diversity, equity, and inclusivity. Exactly the same values you hear being dissed by whiny, low-information Christians at school board meetings and state legislatures and on propaganda-driven cable news stations. The teachings of the Jesus I'm talking about show us how he was connected with the deep truths of his own Jewish traditions, and yet reinterpreted them for his day. He took the words of Rabbi Hillel, presented in the negative, passive voice, "Whatever you don't want people to do to you, don't do to them," and put it in a positive, proactive voice, "So whatever you wish people would do to you, do so to them, for this is the law and the prophets." And that's where we're called to take action today. People think that what it means to be Christian today is about the passive, believe this or that, or the negative, don't do this and don't do that. When what Jesus was on about was living, being fully alive, being in a relationship with the divine that transforms one's life. Not for the sake of our own transformation, but for us to be part of transforming the world. I love the idea behind the symbol of the United Church of Christ's logo. Do you know what it is? A comma. Yeah, they've adopted a quote from theologian Gracie Allen. "Don't put a period where God has put a comma." I love it. And it helps me transcend the static, belief-oriented finality of the creeds. For in the very thing that the creeds have reduced to nothing but a comma lies for me the hope for the future of being a follower of Jesus, the witness of Jesus' life, his teachings, and his relationship with the divine. Why is Jesus worth saving? Because in saving the Jesus of history, we reveal the essence of what it means to be fully human. As Athanasius said in the 4th century, "Jesus became human so we might become divine." Jesus has shown us the way. The rest is up to us. In her book, Parables, Megan McKenna tells this amazing story. Once upon a time, there was a woman who wanted peace in the world and peace in her heart and all sorts of good things. But she was very frustrated. The world seemed to be falling apart. She would read the papers and get depressed. One day, she decided to go shopping. And she went into a mall and picked a store at random. She walked in and was surprised to see Jesus behind the counter. She knew it was Jesus because he looked just like the pictures she'd seen. She looked and looked at him and finally got up the nerve to ask, "Excuse me, but are you Jesus?" "I am." Do you work here?" No, I own the store." What do you sell?" "Oh, just about anything." "Anything?" "Yeah, what do you want?" "Oh, I don't know." "Well, feel free to browse, make a list, and then come back to the counter and we'll see what we can do." Well, she walked up and down the aisles and she made her list. Peace on earth, no more war, no hunger or poverty, no discrimination, peace in the families, no more substance abuse, clean air. She wrote furiously. And by the time she got back to the counter, she had a long list. Jesus took the list, skimmed it, looked up and smiled. No problem. He then bent down behind the counter and picked out all sorts of things. He stood up and laid out these packets. "What are these?" she asked. "Seed packets. This is a catalog store." "You mean I don't get the finished product?" "Nope. You come in here, see what it looks like, and I give you the seeds. You plant them, nurture them, help them to grow, and someone else reaps the benefits." "Oh," she said, and left the store without buying anything. Don't leave the store without buying anything. It's not just about believing the right stuff or convincing God of how good you are. Jesus shows us how to be and gives us the resources to be a part of transforming the world. And in having that call, in finding that purpose for one's life, is the reason why Jesus is worth saving. May we go out into the world committed to be fully, tenaciously, imperfectly, boldly, compassionately, gloriously human, just like Jesus. Be well.
Thanks for listening to this week's Applying It to Life from the Fountains. For more information or to support this outreach with a donation, visit www.weputlovefirst.org.